What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to Fudge Muppet. We're here with Michael and Drew. I'm Scott, and today we are discussing the top 10 gods. We're going to go through every single god, but we've got a few exceptions, and I'm going to sort of lay out the ground rules here. So we're not doing any Daedric princes, because we already ranked them in episode 2, plus they'd probably top the list way too easily. So also no Anu, Padme, Anuiel, Sithis, or any of the variations of the primordial forces, because they're not like god enough. They're like too,
or they're too god.
Yeah, they're like too big in cosmic forces.
Yeah, they're on another level.
Yeah. Also not going to do the tribunal gods, including, not part of the tribunal, but Dagoth Ur as well, because
Dagoth Ur would immediately win.
Yeah, and Vec would win, but you know. But look, they're all basically, they're too strong of a character. Like, they're a very real mortal character rather than the sort of like abstract godlike kind of thing that the Aedra and others are. So it would be sort of an unfair playing ground. We're also not going to do demigods, so things like Morrowhouse and stuff like that. Proper gods. And to make the list reasonable size, because if you were to look at the big list of gods, there's heaps even outside the Daedra, but we are counting cultural variations in that one slot. So basically, if it's Lorcan, we're also factoring in Shazar and Shor, or for Kinnereth, we're factoring in Kyn and Carnathy, and like basically every cultural interpretation all counts as the one entity which we'll be ranking.
Another thing to note as well is that we aren't going to be having, I mean, we are having some gods that are said to have been mortals first, but we're not going to be including their mortal lives as part of their ranking, for example. Like, it's more about them as gods, but also their ascension to godhood, but not the whole mortal life that came before that.
Yeah, so if we talk about Talos, we're not going to be going through Tiber Septim's full life story and how he conquered, you know, all of that stuff. It's more ascending to godhood / being a god.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing is, this is not a power list. This is basically all subjective. When we're factoring in things, just our subjective coolness factor, but also things like the rituals or the culture around them, their followers, just their spheres in general, and also their multiple cultural interpretations. Like we just said, but I think that just about covers everything. So we're going to go through this big list of gods we've created alphabetically, and we're going to decide if they get into a top 10, and then we're going to sort of unanimously decide on this top 10, then we're going to rank them specifically. So let's get to it, starting in alphabetical order with Akatosh / Alkosh / Auriel, the time god of the Aedra.
Well, this may not be my number one, but I think it definitely you would be putting Akatosh in the top 10. I know it's not a list based on significance, but significance does add coolness as well.
I agree,
definitely top 10.
And it's not just the fact that it's the god of time and everything like that. A lot of it as well is also like thought of being the father of all dragons and all this stuff with Alduin, firstborn of Akatosh, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think it's just a given. It's top 10. Yeah. Because we'll go into deeper discussion on all of these once we actually get
to the top 10 as well. It's also worth noting that our top 10 will actually be more than 10 to begin with, because there'll be disputes, so it's kind of like a probably top 10 pile.
Yeah.
And then we'll like chop some out. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so next one would be RK / Tuwaka / I know Orki is another sort of interpretation, but that's kind of like mixed in with a little bit of Malakath.
I still consider him to be more of a Malakath Orki than RK, even though there's
let's just stay on RK / Tuwaka. What do you guys think? I'll let you guys always go first.
Well, RK being the god of the cycle of life and death is generally pretty cool, but I think what sets RK apart is if you take into consideration his supposed ascension from being immortal.
Yeah, that's actually my favorite part as well, even though it's probably not the most likely. Like, it's like this little legend you find. Like, because there's different types of things about the creation of the gods and stuff like that. I don't know if you want to read the story or if we'll get into that when we get more competitive with ranking them.
Like, I would, for me, I would definitely say top 10. Also, because of the Yakudin interpretation, like Tuwaka. But yeah, we can talk about that later. But I just really like, I think it's a cool god, you know.
Is that the god of nobody really cares?
Yeah, that's before he was running, before he was ferrying the spirits to the afterlife. Before right. mortality was there, he was just the god of no one. Nobody really cares.
Yeah, so. Okay.
But let's go on to then. So that can go in the top 10 or maybe
part. Yeah. I mean, they're all...
It's in my...
He's a contender. He's
yeah,
a contender.
They're all contenders.
Okay,
all
right.
I wouldn't put him in the top 10, but he's a contender.
All right, how about... Okay. How about Bandar?
Okay, I'll tell you what. I really liked Bandar when I was playing the Winter Sun mod because you can put Skooma in people's pockets... and then pray to Bandar to activate it, and they all explode with fire, which is awesome. But, like, it's fun, right? But there's not a heap of significance there. Like, the whole idea of, like, being this kind of trickster god, this bandit god, is really cool, but I don't know if it's top 10 cool. There's also, to me at least, I don't know what you two think of this, but in Elder Scrolls Online, they've touched on some Bandar stuff. Mm. And there's... Bandar has a realm, the Five Fingers Dance. But basically, there's this festival of pranks. I don't know, the word pranks just really makes me cringe.
Prank patrol.
Played between teams of Khajiit and Wood Elves, so they may be granted access to the bandit god's realm. So it's like, haha, the prank festival.
It's just Khajiit going into Wood Elf neighborhoods. And just trying to piss off the local wood elves.
I do quite like that they've sort of expanded on a little bit, that it's part of the Khajiit sort of genius. Like, that's representative of that. Outplaying their mortal enemies, as it says here. But I am a sucker for poetic descriptions, and I do like the man of a thousand faces. Mm. I just think that...
You can kind of associate that with their many forms as well, which is kind of cool. So.
Yeah, no, I definitely think Bandar is cool. I just don't know if it's top 10 cool. But is it? Am I staring into the face of a man with Bandar at number one?
So I actually think the problem with Bandar is he's kind of overshadowed by other Khajiit unique gods.
Mm. Yeah.
I prefer some of their others to Bandar.
We could put it in the maybe pile, but... I'm still unsure.
He's gutted.
No. Honestly, well, like if it was a person, like we were talking about
Bandar. Bandar is in the contenders list for now. I don't find Bandar terrible. I just think as a god, it's not like it sounds cool, but it's nothing.
That's the one thing we have to consider, though, is there's outside. There's a few of them that are really detailed, but there's a lot of these gods here that are just going to be like, they're one-liners or a little bit about them, or they were just sort of like not really mentioned anymore. They were mainly Daggerfall kind of things.
100%. Like, that's the thing, especially when you get into like Redguard and Yakudin gods.
Mm.
They might have just one sentence. Like, the coolest... Like, I'd be keen to learn more about them, but the coolest Yakudin gods are often the interpretations of other gods.
Yeah.
But the ones that only exist in like a Yakudin or a Redguard pantheon, they might just be like you don't know enough about them. But anyway, we'll move on from Bandar. I think the next one on the list is Diagna.
Diagna.
Am I correct? So this was an avatar of Hunding or the Hunding that kind of achieved permanence. But I think this is kind of... Oh no, it's not the one I was going to say, but it is a small one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, this cool sounded like that, like, originated in Yakuta during the 27 Snake Folk Slaughter. I wonder if that's referencing Sayesi somehow. Like, if they are, like, it, you know, that's the only Snake Folk we sort of know of.
Yeah, really. It is interesting. Like, all of these gods have cool things, but I think I'm going to make a judgment call now that Diagna is not.
It's not, it wouldn't be in my top 10.
In the top 10.
But I do just really watch that. It is actually one of my, like, favorite of the
sounding gods.
Yeah, like just there's some cool stuff too. And I like the idea that he brought the Orichalcum weapons to the Yakudins and so on. I feel like that's something that's just not really talked about as much, is the sort of Orichalcum focus of Yakuta, and like with Orichalc Tower, but also bringing them those weapons, but also because I did this in the video about it a while ago about the armor type, but Orichalcum is like actually a real mysterious metal in our real life. It was like a, I think they speculate it was a type of bronze or something, but our real world, like, I guess, mythology or like what Plato and stuff said about it, about Atlantis. Atlantis had like high, like lots of sources of this orichalcum stuff. Or maybe it was just called orichalc, I can't remember.
And then what, sank with the Pancrato sword, and now there's no more.
Well, yeah, exactly. But that, and it had some big like pillar to Poseidon made of that material. But that's sort of like orichalcum tower on Yakuta and so on. So there's Atlantis influences in there. But
And given that he's described as the god of the sideways blade, there's no doubt he's involved heavily in like teaching them their kind of unique martial arts that separates them from other warrior cultures.
Hmm. All right, next up, Dabella.
Hey.
Top 10, 100%. How do you feel about that, Drew?
Look, she's all right. She's fine. You know, I'd have a go. no, look, there's a lot of lore about her, you know, like putting beauty and love at the, you know, at the forefront of your life and, you know, seeing the beauty in things and all that. It's good, but obviously I think people get a little bit carried away with it as well.
Yeah, I can kind of agree with that in a sense. Like there's a lot of information on Dabella, but all of it kind of, you know, hammers home the same concept over and over again.
But like, I do like
a lot of hyper unique stuff.
Yeah, but also like the creativity and stuff and the beauty and stuff is like the sort of like, you know, arts and so on. Like it's not just the sexual dynamic that's often talked about.
I definitely agree. I just also think that,
and I just also
you got it. Sorry, you go.
I was just saying that if you think about it's just interesting. Like out of compared to like most Abrahamic religions, which are very like sexually conservative, it's interesting that in a in this sort of fantasy realm, you have a god that's very forward with it. Like they actually have whole like, you know, what do they call them? I forget the name. Well, they're just the Dabellan arts and so on, and then that kind of like their practitioners actually like are very active about it. And but also touching on the creativity thing too, like. I like the brush of true paint.
Like, that's exactly what I was going to say. Made supposedly from Dabella's own hair and allows you to just kind of paint your own universe like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And I just like, as a general rule, you know, I'm a sucker for aesthetics besides we're talking about, you know, the obvious, but I also like the, in ESO, there's these Dabella's doll masks and stuff like that, and they're sort of like kind of Venetian-y style masks and so on, but you can just imagine, or at least I do, her realm in general just encapsulating all sort of like aesthetic creativity and stuff like that, and you know, beauty, which is that, and I don't know, to me I really like that.
Me too. So but this isn't a list, and this is the thing you have to realize, this isn't a list of who would you worship if you were dropped into the Elder Scrolls universe.
No, but like we're just talking about subjectively what gods
I understand that. I'm just saying I think Dabella is something that I could get behind from that perspective, but in terms of like, oh, Dabella is really cool, it's like, yeah, I know these aren't Daedric princes,
but a lot of the gods aren't gonna sound super cool except for a few, like, but there are but yeah,
I like the sentence pays men in moans.
Yeah,
the god that pays men in moans.
Yeah, it's also interesting that she's actually a human god, well, like or at Morrowind origin, or that came through the Nords or so on. She's not actually in the original elven pantheons.
I'll chuck it up in the contenders category.
Definitely contenders category. All right, let's move on to Ebon Arm. What do we think?
Definite top 10.
Really?
I really like, even though there's only a small amount, well, it's not that small, but I really like everything about Ebon Arm. Just the description of how he appears on the battle. So he's the god of war.
Sucker for knights, bro.
Yeah, he is.
But
I mean, he rides a golden stallion. He's accompanied by two huge black ravens, as an ebony sword fused to his right arm. Full suit of ebony armor, tower shield emblazoned with a red rose. Tall, bearded, muscular, with reddish blonde hair and steel blue eyes. It's like, I don't know, just a very cool description. And then they say that when he comes onto the battlefield, like roses grow where he's been, so that's why he has the rose on his shield and stuff like that.
You're swooning. Yeah,
I can actually I can actually agree. Like, I like Ebonarm. Mm-hmm. Ebonarm ranks kind of highly for me. And I also like the interaction, which I guess we'll talk about because this is alphabetical, but with Sai,
I was just
mortal,
about to say that, yeah.
Who eventually got given the gift of immortality and kind of became the god of luck. Mm.
There's also the whole Ebony Warrior connection and so on, which isn't explicit, like the
but it's implied.
Yeah. I do like Ebonarm a lot. I've also always speculated, at least, I thought, like, you know, Raymond Ebonarm, as in R-E-Y-M-O-N, is the first name of this character. I always, on some subconscious level, I don't know if it is actually supposed to be, but connected to Raymond Cyrodiil, like Raymond, like that. Oh, yeah. Like, because he's really popular in Hammerfell, but like after the Second Empire and so on. But like, I don't know. Because I've always thought of Ebonarm doesn't, because he's very popular in Hammerfell, and he doesn't seem very Yakudin by his description to me, at least. I don't know. Like, I just never really associated ebony armor and a fused sword, like, and the big tower shield and stuff. Like, the big heavy, heavily armored knight, also with, what was it? Like, tall muscular, yeah, reddish blonde hair and steel blue eyes, doesn't sound very Redguard to me. And so I've always, that always confused me a little bit, but like, I didn't know exactly where.
But this is the thing, when you look at this list, and I know it's all subjective, but I can kind of agree with Drew that Ebonarm is sounding a whole lot cooler than Dibella.
The only thing is cool, like any god then that's combat oriented is going to sound cooler. Like, you've kind of got to factor in, like,
well, not
the
necessarily
whole,
I mean, Akatosh isn't a combat
bro, it's a dragon. There's... like, you know, the dragon things, and it's like Auriel with his bow and how he shot the heart. Like, there's a lot of combat.
Fair enough.
Theatrics.
I mean, a simple thing about Ebonarm is I really like his connection with Sai, not just because he made him a god, but it's the idea that, you know, if you worship this god of war and you're really brave on the battlefield, you could literally be rewarded with godhood. And the idea is that he's supposed to bestow luck upon brave soldiers and stuff in the future. So it's very much like, not just combat, but very much battlefield related as well. Yeah.
Which is 100% combat related.
Yeah, but it's not just, you know, dueling or whatever. It's, you know.
I agree, definitely Ebonarm contender up there.
Okay, but, so we'll put Ebonarm. And we shall move to Hunding.
I really like the concept of him, the like perseverance over infidels for the Yakudans. I like the sort of idea that it's this sort of manifestation that comes. I just don't think it is. There's not enough for it to be like top 10 material, in my opinion, just because I know it came as like, there's some cool stuff around it about like the Elder Scrolls Adventures Redguard story, where he's like the sword or sword crown prince or both. But like, it's a cool concept, but do you know how it's kind of becomes like vague? It's just like, oh, the Yakudans, we're gonna win, god. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's exactly. Even all the aspects, it's not like they're tied into like a concept other than making way for the Red Guards.
Yeah, which is a really cool thing, but it doesn't become like top 10 material. I guess it's just not enough, and it's also. Sorry, I was just going to say, it feels more like a force rather than an individual, especially because it has avatars. Like, it's less, there's less personality to it.
I think judging him is very similar to how we're going to be able to judge Shazar or Lorcan, is the idea of, can you give them credit for their aspects or their, you know, their champions? Because I've got Hunding quite high up because of Cyrus and Frandar, you know, being aspects of Hunding. But then again, it's not really Hunding's achievements. It's just he resembles what they do. You know, because even Diagna, you could say, if you rate Diagna high, then don't you kind of have to rate Hunding high? Or is that, so it's a weird area.
It is a complicated,
But I mean, we didn't rank Diagna high.
So. Well, I mean, Ebonarm is supposedly also an aspect of Hunding. I think I've read that somewhere.
That might be some theory crafting thing.
Maybe I'm too deep.
But like, we can put it in the maybe pile if you want, but I just feel like there's still a lot to go through.
Would you? I'll leave it
chuck
up
it
to
in
you.
The maybe.
Do you want,
I'm just putting. Have you? Has someone been fucked? Doing like keeping all of these. In the maybe no. part?
Yes.
You have?
Okay,
you're
cool.
Doing it? Yep. Cool.
Mike is the sensible one.
I assumed you were, but then I realized
I'm
like,
always doing
I never
it.
Explicitly
I'm the list
said
king.
It.
I'm the list king.
All right. Next one, Julianos. Jewel. That's the
Julian.
Yeah.
Julian.
Or Junal, who, for me, Junal makes him cooler. I like the idea of the owl thing, and I like him being the what is that? Hold on, I've got to find the specific. It's Hermetic Orders or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just like that because that's, you know, like Hermeticism in real life and the philosophical. It's kind of like, it's just tying the magic worship to a philosophical sort of take on it a bit more rather than just, oh, magic of powers and like associated with a mage's guild. Instead, it's that sort of like more magical magic, you know what I mean? That's vague and unexplained. That's at least the vibe I get from him. But at the same time, I don't know. I think there's a lot of other gods I'd prefer over Julianus because there's not that much on them. And Junal, it's only one of their interpretations really which vibes with me.
Yeah, I was going to say similar, as in I like the concept, but the actual... it's just not thick, you know? Mm. There's not a whole lot there.
Being the god of logic and wisdom can be kind of bland, even though the usage of, you know, his sphere can be really cool. It's just kind of...
Interestingly, he's also... I'm pretty sure he's an Atmoran-derived god. Like, Julianos is only from... I like, there's no equivalent in the Elven. Well, like, there's other magically related gods, but I don't think they're necessarily connected. But yeah. So is that a Julianos... doesn't make the cut?
Nah.
All right,
nah.
Out. All right, let's go Joan and Jode, the moon gods.
Out.
There's just not enough to them.
Just to everyone listening, the Khajiit are really cool, and the moon cycles and all that are really cool. But as actual, like, godly entities for Jode and Joan, there's just not much.
I mean, in the Khajiit pantheon, they're described as being Fadamai's stillborn children. So... like, even from birth, they're not actually really doing anything. It's more how the other gods are interacting with them.
Mm.
So, you know, it's Kanafi who keeps them on their tracks or whatever, and Azura uses the moons to make the moon sugar or whatever. So it's not so much the moons being interesting as the gods who interact with them.
Yeah, agreed. Mm. All right, next is Kinnereth / Kanafi / Kine / Tava. Absolutely top 10.
Yeah, I was going to put... Yeah, I agree as well.
All
there's
right.
just so much stuff there, and the interpretations of the gods, there's a lot of different interpretations, but that makes it cool, like Kinnereth versus Kine and so on.
Well, let's move on then. We'll talk about that later. Lecky.
Which was this the one that kind I was going to say no straight away?
Yeah,
it's kind of the same situation as Diagna, where it sounds cool, but there's not much information. It's the goddess of aberrant swordsmanship, so kind of helping them find their own unique way to fight, and that's kind of all you really get.
Yeah.
All right, that's an out. Lorcan, sure, it's 100% an in top 10. Larry, right, let's move on. All right, Manamarco / Necromancer's Moon. So that's as in Manamarco becoming in the warp in the West, where the big dragon break happens, and there's sort of like all of the multiple variations of time, but reconciled into a single timeline. Manamarco both becomes a god and then remains mortal, and that's the one you see in Oblivion. But I'm pretty sure he's said to be called the Necromancer's Moon as well, and he circles RK, the planet. Hold on.
Huh.
The thing with Manamarco, while you're looking that up, is most of what's interesting, there's a lot of the mortal stuff there, which influences me. And I would have Manamarco ranked quite highly, but if we are, and I'm sure a lot of viewers do as well, but if we're going to go straight off this idea that their mortal life doesn't really count until they're up to the point of like achieving apotheosis, then... he's still cool. I don't know, top 10 cool.
Nah, because he essentially just becomes, in his god form, he's like, he's just this moon. His form ascended to godhood, has taken the rightful place in the sky, and hides the enemy RK from us so that we may serve him. This is about the Order of the Worm, Black Worm. It's also called so the Revenant or the Necromancer's Moon. But it's sort of like, yeah, it's a divine form, but, and you know, I'm pretty sure it was in the Oblivion Mages Guild quest line. That's actually what they're using to make black soul gems in an altar, using the power of the... But like, yeah, there's not enough there to really... Like, the lich is cool, Manic Marco himself, but that's the... Well, mortal, he's a lich.
Immortal version.
The non-divine version, you know.
I think you missed Magnus, if we were going purely alphabetically speaking.
Oh, well, I had Magnus next. I've just decided to mix it up, you know, keep you on your toes.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, Magnus... is a hole in the sky. Expand, guys. What do you think?
Yeah. That Magnus is, to me, one of the really cool gods in terms of, like, the creation story. Like, it's a very... he's a very important god. But I don't rate him as, like, particularly interesting.
It's like...
It kind of falls... I know he's different to Julianos, but he kind of falls in that same, like, it's magic god. Yeah. Like, worship, get more magic. Not really my... top 10.
If Lorcan kind of is like Steve Jobs, then Magnus is that other Steve who no one remembers his last name because he's the architect of Mundus. But he's not really the create, like he's not the visionary guy. He's the guy who actually puts it together.
Yeah.
And then you forget about him.
Yeah. Bye, Magnus. Bye bye. Don't make it. All right. Next one, Mara. I'd love to hear what you guys think first.
Okay. Well, I think Mara is cool, but I think it is easy to... I think Mara might be overrated. I don't know who you've got in your top fives and stuff, but I think Mara could be overrated. Look, I'm all about love. Love is great. And fertility, agriculture, compassion, all that stuff's great. And I definitely like the kind of Red Guard interpretation with Morwa and stuff. Like, that's cool. The whole forearms to grab more husbands. I like that, but... if we chuck that reference away, I don't find Mara super crazy interesting in the same way that I don't find Dibella super crazy interesting. I really like what Mara stands for, and if you put me into Skyrim, perhaps I would worship Mara. But as an actual god, it's like, I give love, and if love comes to two people, then so be it, because love is the greatest force ever. Like, a lot of it is just love, 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 love. Even when you read through... I mean, if you go through a wiki and like look at all the information on Mara, there's lots of it, but it is, again, repeating similar thing about love, marriage, and
that
kind of thing.
It's not that simple, because she was not the wife of Shaw, which is interesting. She was the concubine of Shaw, and this is something I find interesting. I put in the... I'm pretty sure it was in the Secrets of Etmora video when I was sort of trying to make sense of the timeline and reconciling some elements. But you have... you know, in Nordic mythology, the elven pantheon of gods are taken very literally to be like the enemies of the human gods, the Nordic gods. So they're at opposition. And Mara exists in the elven pantheon as the god of love and wife of Auriel, is supposedly, and so on. But then I kind of like, at least this is my kind of headcanonish kind of interpretation, but I like the idea that she, like, kind of with all the compassion and love and stuff, kind of that, like, sort of sided with men and kind of ended up becoming the concubine of Shaw, kind of thing. Because Shaw already has a wife in the form of Kine, but Mara's, you know, stated as his concubine. So I sort of like the idea that she's, and just, you know, with her sphere being compassion and love, that she's kind of gone over to the side of men.
What, she's a minx.
Yeah.
I agree she's cool, but also with Michael that it's not enough to get into the top 10.
Dibella,
we're not going to start simping.
Question, you know? How many have you got, bro? How many have we got in the top maybe pile?
Oh, plenty. Are we putting Mara in the maybe pile?
I mean, I would. I think Mara's good, but...
I can agree with that. Don't, like, everyone who's listening to this, I only went in against Mara because I know Scott's... probably like got Mara number one or something.
I just think that Mara's like, I like her presence in the Elven and Nordic pantheons and how they, she fills different roles and how you can kind of
make it. But do they really? Thing. Because a lot of it, and this is the thing, at least as far as I am interpreting things, she's not filling different roles. Like, she's the kind of fertility love goddess everywhere.
No. She is the same god. I mean, just in the hierarchy that they've got. do you know what I mean? I like the wife versus concubine kind of thing, and
right. And sort of, I mean, yeah. There
I just like the differences. Like the idea that makes it that, you know, just Shaw's got that, you know, that energy that just he's a wife stealer as well as being a betrayer. I just feel like it adds that extra stuff to.
Well, that should add points to Shaw.
Imagine how much Auriel would hate Shaw.
Auriel.
Well, I think Mara is more of a maternal figure to non-Nords because she's kind of the mother god, whereas to the Nords, she can kind of be that more concubine wife type because Kain kind of takes a more maternal role to them as the one who breathed them onto the throat of the world.
Oh, she's also the handmaiden of Kain as well. So she's referring specifically her handmaiden as well.
Who spoke to... slave Alicia before she rebelled.
Yeah, well, that's cool too, you know.
Okay.
But okay. I don't know.
We can definitely have Mara in the contenders pile.
Yeah, all right, contenders.
It's just not a top five of mine.
Let's go. All right.
Okay.
Onsi.
No.
Bone Shaver. That's a no. It's just, yeah.
This is the one I was waiting for this whole time. Yeah. The whole time, because it's just Onsi taught mankind how to pull their knives into swords. That's sick. That's really cool. But. I mean, there we go.
All right. Time for Rajin. Drew.
I've got him top 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had him in top 10, and I think I still could. But my only thing is, the only problem is, like, he's living. A lot of his accomplishments are done while living. Like, and then after he's... And I guess, but in part, but I guess that's related to his apotheosis. You could argue that it is related because... It's only because he was such an amazing, brilliant thief that he became the god anyway. So it is kind of...
Yeah, but then he's like a cultural god. But then couldn't you have...
I definitely know what you're saying, but then couldn't you argue that, like, Manamarco's whole descent into necromancy is related to his apotheosis into a god, and his whole path of finding the dark arts is what allowed him to become the necromancer?
No, because it's more directly... I guess more directly they'll go the Mantella and the Dragon Break. What allowed him to ascend.
Yeah. Whereas fair with enough. Rajin, it's very much he culturally got there. Still, so it's not though, like he did something.
Still though, I reckon he's, as much as he like stole some cool stuff and so on, he is just like, there's not heaps on him either. Like if you were like, do you know what I mean? Mm. Like he's cool, but it's like, in some ways he's just a Khajiit, epitome of a Khajiit archetype. Like, oh, I'm going to play Elder Scrolls and I'm a Khajiit and I'm a thief. And it's just...
But he literally invented tattoo removal.
Yeah.
He's way ahead of his time.
Yeah. I mean, it's really...
Lasers.
It's like anything. I feel like this is a lot... Like, the case with a lot of the gods is that you can read, like... Like, I love the idea of the stealing Kintyra's tattoo from her neck and the little things. Like, the mythological-sounding stuff always gets me. But... Really though, if you compare, like you could compare to some of the Red Guard gods as well. I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. Like, I agree, I do like the god, but you could also go to some of the other gods with small amounts of information and say, oh well, like it sounds heaps mythological and cool and poetic. But do you know what I mean? Like, it's really kind of on the same level.
Okay.
When you actually,
I think that's fair.
Because. Yeah, like...
I'm moving Raj into the Nah pile. What do you two think of that?
That's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
I think because some people really like it. I think some people might be a little bit miffed with that one. But I actually kind of... I would probably go maybe. I could maybe or...
Okay, fine. If in doubt, maybe.
If in doubt, we'll do maybe. But I'm pretty sure... I always... When I did the top 10 for myself, I put them like right towards the bottom. For that reason, but yeah.
That's all right. We'll revisit and dive deeper.
Yeah.
So,
all right.
Let's move on to Reman.
I want to throw my two cents real quick. I think Reman is as a culture god and sort of the Second Empire is not that interesting because if we're trying to actually separate his apotheosis from his accomplishments, because he was kind of, it's not as, like, from my understanding, it's not as explicit as the understanding that, like, you know, Talos became the ninth divine. Instead, it's a bit more like Reman. They sort of worshipped him as the culture god in the same way that the sort of like real Romans started worshipping their emperors after death and saw them as divine. But it's different, if it kind of makes sense. Like, it's not as... I don't think Reman Cyrodiil was worshipped on the same, on par with like the ninth divine Talos kind of thing.
Yeah.
From my understanding, at least. And, like, you know, if we're being fair, like, all... You know, to be honest, Riemann the First... The part that I like about it, I guess, that would go in his favor is, once again, the mythological sort of story about his birth in the Remonada. But that's kind of all it's got going for me as in terms of as a god, not an emperor, as the god worshipped after death. So is that a no for you guys?
Yeah, it's a no from me.
I mean, Pelennor Whitestrake screaming Riemann's pretty cool, but yeah.
But yeah, it's
not enough to... He can't scream it into the top 10.
Yeah. So, next then is Sai.
Yeah. Now, I actually really liked Sai.
Okay.
I like the idea. I just like the concept of being a luck god that you can't worship for too much, or you get a disease called Sai's affliction.
Hmm.
You know, that seeks you to become like a desperate kind of gambler, like eager to get the god's favor back. And this kind of thing, and also the relation of Sai with Ebonarm, as we kind of touched on before.
Yeah. What do you think, Drew?
Well, that, like, he's being the god of luck, he's got a lot of response, like, with great power, you know, comes great responsibility. So, like, he spent too much time with his Nord wife. Mm-hmm. Well, no, I don't know if it's necessarily a wife, but basically had a child with her, and then Ebonarm comes, like, come on, mate. Sort it out. You can't just be loving on the Nords, because, you know, there's a theory that partially Sire's affection for his Nord mistress or wife is what caused the Snow Elves to have such a rough time.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff there. It's not... The thing is, with Sire, it's not a god that you really hear about much, particularly if you haven't played Daggerfall.
The low-key...
So a lot of the listeners will be like, who's Sai?
The low-key reason is, I think, like, low-key Ebonarm and Sai are sort of retconned. Well, they're just not... They're not explicitly, but I don't think they're ever going to be mentioned again.
I don't think ESO liked them very much.
No,
I don't know
if
why.
If I'm recalling correctly, they're the ones that kind of tried to retcon them out.
Because it kind of had it... Like, I think when Daggerfall started, it was a bit more of a generic fantasy. So, like, you know, Ebonarm, for example, is listed as the enemy of all Daedra and so on. And it kind of had a bit... They had a... It wasn't as, like, I guess, nuanced or so on. It was a bit more, like, just demons versus good gods. And I don't know. There's some Daggerfall stuff that you kind of take with a grain of salt. Like, for example, like, Molag Bal is said to... I'm pretty sure it's Molag Bal is said to be an ally of Azura. Because these are all the descriptions from Daggerfall. But, you know, if you... Once you've the Morrowind laws added and you've got the four corners of the House of Troubles and stuff, that doesn't really make sense. And it doesn't really... Or like, I think there was, like... There was an interesting one with Mephala being allied with someone, which I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's a few things that you kind of have to take with a grain of salt. But I feel like I would prefer... Look... Always quality over quantity, but I definitely do just like there being other gods and other deities that exist around the place, and their power levels are kind of subject to how much worship they're getting. One of the things, if it wasn't clear as well, with Sai was a mortal killed in battle, and Ebonarm basically appears to him and gives him a deal, which is, you can die now, or I'll make you a mortal, but you have to be this god of luck and go around and spread luck around fairly.
I'll be honest, like, there's some cool parts. Like, I like the explanation of the baby and stuff in Skyrim, and how he brought all the luck to the Nords, and that's why they spread to the Empire in early history and whatnot. But it's just still not... I don't know, it's not my top 10, not my flavor exactly. Like, it doesn't...
I feel like I'm going to have to put it into the maybe pile if we've got Hunding there.
Is Hunding in the maybe pile?
Yeah, because of Drew.
Oh, really?
Well, it comes down to how we're going to rate them. Are we going to give them credit?
All right, well, look, just put it in the maybe pile for now, or we'll go through the rest. But I feel like we'll be knocking that one from the maybe pile quick smart.
Plus, I think inherently, Ebonarm comes above Sai.
I mean, if you were to group the two together and their stories as the same kind of, like...
Yeah, it's related for sure.
Different chapters of the same book.
Well, let's just go on then, and let's look at Stendarr / Stun.
Okay, for me, Stendarr is absolutely a top 10.
I agree.
Stendarr is very, very cool.
I really like, it's just one of those things that's really nice in all the pantheons. I love how in the Elven pantheon, it's seen as the apologist of men. And then obviously I like the Nordic take on Storm as like, instead of their, because you know, he's a god of mercy and justice, but he's a god of ransom. I just think that's really cool. Like, yeah, that's the Nordic too. Way of mercy is ransom instead of execution. You know what I mean? Or something like that.
Oh, for sure. And all of the teachings and stuff are kind of interesting. Yeah, vigilance, like when you realize, but the whole, I like the kind of thing where it's like about mercy. And even if you do wrong by the gods, you can be forgiven by Stendarr and blessed and everything. But if you're a vampire, a Daedra, an undead, like, or a werewolf or whatever, no mercy for you. You know, it's interesting, like violent, but just merciful at the same time.
I also like, I don't know why, I just like his little statue, the pouring of the.
Well, it's taken from real world stuff, isn't it?
It could have been. I can't.
I believe.
Is it the cornucopia? Unless I'm.
Yeah.
So the horn of plenty. Yeah. Essentially.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah. Let agree, Drew.
Yeah. Look, I'm fine with him being top 10.
Okay, fine, but he's not in your top 10. I'm interested. All right, let's hit Cerebane then.
Oh, Cerebane, don't get me started. When I was doing the Flesh Magic video, and I had to go into Trader's Vault on Arteum, which is where Matamarco kind of explored the dark arts early on, you see a conversation between Vanis Galarian and Matamarco, and he goes, and maybe this is right, I'm not sure how many times I've heard Cerebane said in game, but he goes, "What in Cerebane's name do you think you're doing?" or something like that. And I was like, yeah. Cerebane, I don't know. Cerebane sounds much better.
100%. I don't think he did much. I'm not that interested. Like,
he's just the patron of young mages, basically.
Yeah, he helped he helped fight the Slowed, but I don't know. Out. Okay. Let's move on then to Talos the Unassailable.
I think Talos is 100%. Is up there.
All right, cool. Next one, Trinimac. Drew is
pretty cool.
Is that your eyes lighting up? Waiting.
I like Trinimac.
Yeah.
Do we all like Trinimac?
Is he your top one, bro? I know he's not.
He's top six.
Okay. Right, but I just knew you'd have Trinimac up there. I'm happy to put him in the contender pile, but we can get into this later. I just find him kind of like straightforward, if that makes sense. He's just an elven knight god, essentially.
I'm a bit disappointed. I was really G'd to have a debate with Drew about why Trinimac's not number one. But number six sounds so reasonable.
He's the enemy of Lorcan. Like, the idea of them, you know, the armies of elves and men in the early days fighting, and then him, you know, kicking him down on the battlefield and ripping out Lorcan's heart on the battlefield. It's all pretty cool.
And his demise is cool as well. The convention.
Yeah. So there's a lot of reasons why he's cool, you know, even if he's not most powerful.
Yeah, although he is up there even in power. Like, consider that, you know, Boethia and Mephala, or one or both of them, had to trick him to deceive him to beat him and, you know, shit him out and turn him into Malakath. okay, next up is Sun. I do want to just add a note here, is that I think it's just in the Varieties of Faith that he is alluded, there's an alluded to connection between him and Xenathar, but I don't think it's strong enough to really warrant putting them together. So I feel like it's almost just like, oh, it kind of fits the eight or whatever. But Sun is he's dead. That's why he's in Sovngarde.
Yeah, god of trials against adversity, died defending shore from foreign gods. It's cool. He's cool, but for me, he wasn't top 10.
Not top 10.
What about you two?
Not top 10.
Agreed.
I do like him. He's like one of those lesser gods that if you read about in other mythologies, he kind of just feels like the... I guess this isn't fair enough, not even lesser god, but you know the... oh my God, I forgot his name. The river man on the river Styx in Greek mythology, the ferryman.
Oh.
It just kind of feels like that because he's guarding him from... No, I think he is literally just called the ferryman. It's the River Styx,
okay.
Is the name.
Yeah, I swear he had a name, but yeah, okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we know who you're talking about.
Carry on or something?
It began with C. It definitely
began with C. Sharon or something? Like
C-H... C-I-R-O-N?
Something like that.
Drew, did you say you're doing a cosplay of Tsun in the next episode?
Nah, it's not revealing enough.
Yeah, it's I think it's pronounced Charon, like, but it's C-H-A-R-O-N.
Okay.
Whatever. That dude. It kind of gives me that vibe. He's like, because now he's just guards the Whalebone Bridge, his kind of sphere of what he does is very, you know, simple, straightforward. So yeah, that is a no for me. Boom. Next up is Xarxes. Hit me.
I have him high up.
Yeah.
I think he's really cool. A lot of it is kind of mysterious as well. So, you know, he's the god of secrets and hidden knowledge. So in many ways, he's kind of similar to Hermaeus Mora. Mm. And there's the idea that he served Hermaeus Mora. And the thing that I really like about him is where it says... he created his wife, Ogma, from his favorite moments in history. There's so many ways you can interpret that. And it's, pretty cool.
Yeah, I actually thought everything you just said, I totally agree.
I like it, but and this is kind of what we'll have to work out. But it's the same thing. It's like, really, there's not much said about him. It's like, sometimes like there's that mythological sentence. And I'm a sucker for that too. I love those little mythological sentences. But if you're going to put it on par with other gods in regards to like the amount of information, I guess. There's cool I don't know, to me at least he sounded a little bit cooler before Somerset House, because he really drill in that he's like, he's less like Hermaeus Mora in that sort of like Lovecraftian, like, you know how it's like it gives a different vibe, like the ageless one and knowledge and stuff is how he's called. Xarxes is named, but he doesn't, he's just an ancestor elf who like keeps track of all their ancestry and so on.
Well,
and like
I don't know if this will help sell you or perhaps not at all, because it is kind of speculation, but him being the scribe and, you know,
of Auriel.
He's like scribe of Auriel, and he's like largely responsible for the way the high elves care about orderliness and purity. Mm. So in a way, if he is like an old Mary priest who ascended, as some claim or whatever, it's like he can kind of prove that they have a pathway back to godhood, the whole culture. Mm. So he's really impacting their culture if they believe he was once an Aldmer who ascended, you know, because that means, oh shit, someone can do it, we can do it.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like not like, I guess, descended or whatever, because they were like started off as like great elven
yeah.
spirit kind of thing. But yeah, I know yeah. exactly what you meant, like but
I like Xarxes. Xarxes gets to be a contender.
All right, sure.
How about that?
And then what have we got left? Xenathar slash... Oh, sorry. Ifri.
So, Ifri, I'm sorry to all of the Bosma lovers out there who know I ranked the Wood Elves really highly and might be expecting me to jump in here. But I actually... Ifri just doesn't do it for me. I like the Green Pact, and I like all the things made with the wood elves and all of that. It's just the general concept since then is not particularly interesting to me. What do you two think?
For me, I'm kind of in the same boat. Like, it's not necessarily, look, it's definitely not my favorite like nature god archetype, but but meaning like not disliking the archetype, just I prefer Kinnereth hands down over. But I like, one thing that does put it a little bit higher for me is the songs and stories thing, and having the spinners being their priests. That sort of,
I do like the spinners.
I like that whole, that makes him gives him a little bit more spice, you know, rather than just, oh, I'm the tree spirit kind of god of the forest that with the Green Pact. And the Green Pact is cool, and I guess it really hinges on him, but I don't know. There's just something about vibes, bro. I just...
yeah, I think it could be the absence of personality.
What do you think, Drew?
He's my favorite god.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
What a,
yeah, like,
what a take.
But once again, this is kind of commonplace for me, is that having the mystery where I can kind of fill in the gaps myself helps me love a god or love a character.
Oh, like...
part of it is me filling it in. Like... The nature god, the forest god, those kind of gods are my favorite in real world mythology as well. You know, like I love Kernanos, the horned god from Celtic mythology and things like that. And how kind of you've got Herne the Hunter in England and things like that. But yeah, the idea that he's a storyteller and he kind of sings and tells everything into existence. And I wrote a little bit down. It was like, he created the green. So he shaped it with songs and stories. He taught the birds to sing and the waves to lap against the shores. Things like that. I just find it's really nice. It makes Valenwood really cool.
I'd absolutely. Well, let's go like contender then.
Oh,
I mean, I'd put him over contenders that are in
me
there.
Me too. So. Me too. That is fair. I just, it's this weird thing where I know you can't be like objectively subjectively, but I can definitely see why Ifri could rank well. It's just for me, it's just this, what you said when you're like vibes, man. It's
yeah.
Clarify though, he's my favorite god, but he's my number two.
Because
I still think there's one who is better.
All right, look, let's keep going. Are we all just going to ditch Xenophar? Is that how it's going? Or does someone like him?
Or is that going to be the true number one who reveals as the top?
No, he's all right. Like, the Xenophar of the Imperials is like, you know, the god of labor and commerce, the idea that you can reach happiness through hard work. It's cool, but nothing too special. I mean, I think you guys know a bit more about Zen than I do.
Well, that way is not particularly interesting.
There's not that much, really, to, like... Look, let's just say no. Move on. Xenophar fans out there are going to be absolutely gutted.
Zen's interesting, but again, it's kind of just another god of agriculture. Like, you know, one interesting part of it is vengeance, though.
Mm.
And I don't know if you could relate that to a kind of like eye for an eye or like... some interesting stuff there with like god of toil and agriculture and payment in kind.
How many have we got left in the thing? Because we've gone through the list now. Because we've got a lot, I feel like.
So we're done the list now. So I just laughed because I searched something on Google as like a mental note for myself for something to do later, and the results are very bad. yeah. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Okay, that's terrible. We need to cut some. All right.
Okay, so I'll just list them for you in alphabetical order. Akatosh, RK, Bandar,
DeBella. All right, let's call out Bai when we think gone. Call out if you think
Absolutely. RK and Bandar for me.
RK and Bandar.
Can we all agree on Bandar?
Yeah, Bandar's out. All right.
Okay.
Yeah, next.
DeBella, Ebonarm, Hunding.
I'd say out. I think.
All right. If Cyrus's achievements and Frandar Hunding's achievements aren't really him, then definitely gone.
Because those two characters are really cool, but it's the same kind of with Talos and Tiber Septim. I know
it means we can't give Lorcan credit for Pelennor.
Yeah, that's fine, I guess.
That's fine. So I'll take out Hunding, then Kinnereth, Lorcan, Mara.
Oh, sorry, what about... Oh, we didn't have Julianus, did we?
No.
Rajin. I'd probably toss Rajin to the side. I don't
know. I had him at number 9, so it's not terrible.
Okay, well, we can all agree we're going to toss Sai out because you don't like him. And Ebonarm's already there. Can we agree with that?
Yeah. All right, let's get rid of Sai.
What do you think about Sai, Drew?
I think Ebonarm's better than Sai. Okay. Top 10.
I'm actually going to write Ebonarm /Sai, even though they're different. Like, it's Ebonarm, but just to remind me the story of Sai. And then we've got Stendar, which is definitely staying. Talos, Trinimax, Xarxes, and Ifri.
Can you guys sell me on Stendar quickly?
Yeah, so
watch our video on it.
Yeah, no, I just
I mean, yeah,
a lot of it is like what his order comes from, and like I said, to me, I kind of like the gods that it's the same way that like Mara appeals to me. I like the idea that she's as an entity sort of has an interaction between the different pantheons, but I like that because of Stun and him being in the Eight Divines, he's also a like the god of justice and he's sort of an imperial divine. I like because now he's really entrenched in the men, the sphere of the manosphere, bro. Just the realms of men. I like that, and because he is a god of mercy in general, I like that his mercy made him an apologist to men from the elves' perspective, but his mercy made him a god of ransom to the Nordic perspective, and then in between, like his mercy. I like the different interpretations of mercy too. So like his mercy to the undead and to the Daedric and stuff is killing them, ridding them because put them out of their misery kind of vibe. So I just kind of like, and then obviously there's the Vigilant of Stendar and the things that sort of come from him. But
yeah, fair. I'll
do you know what that. I could say? I'm gonna come in with a hot take. Let's get rid of RK.
From I mean, the top I'm RK open. Is, I had RK good. Pretty low in my top 10, but
yeah. And Drew seemed keen to get rid of RK. I think I'll read RK out of the list with the story. What do you think? No?
Yeah, no, no, agreed.
The story, where is it? Let me find it. Okay, so it looks kind of long, but basically... So be it known that the gods were once as we. Arke, the god of death and birth, was an ordinary shopkeeper whose only unusual characteristic was a passion for knowledge. To indulge his hobby, he became an avid collector of books on almost any subject he could find in print. One day he stumbled across a tome which purported to tell the secrets of life, death, and the purpose of existence. After months of studying the convoluted logic written in opaque language, he thought he was finally beginning to understand what the author was saying. During this time, he became so intent on understanding the book that he ignored everything else. What?
I just laugh because it's like, it's kind of like, it's boring me out of the top 10. Like, he's leaving the top 10 because
he's
I'm
leaving. His business started to slide towards bankruptcy.
Like, it's like, I'm
his
just fading.
His few friends
here.
Stopped visiting him. He ignored the plague, which was ravaging the town. This was way more interesting when I didn't read it out loud.
Yeah, I mean, it can probably be summarized
pretty well. It probably should be summarized. But basically,
if I was to say,
he prays to Mara. And then he learning about like life and death and he's dying, prays to Mara. Mara says, why should I make an exception for you? He goes, Mother Mara, I'm finally beginning to understand the book and the meaning of life and death and like needs a little more time to think and study on others.
Yeah,
and then I'm assuming Mara grants him that.
Ain't
but
it, Chief?
He's gone.
Because also I'll just offer there on like Tuaka too. It's sort of like a little bit of like meme value almost, like the god of nobody really cares. Like it's, you know, it's a bit more. Yeah, he's out. I'll throw it there. What do you guys think about Xarxes going bye bye?
Not before Rajin, surely.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, not before
2-1.
Oh, sorry. So get where's Rajin?
Rajin's there. I reckon we can get rid of.
I'd get Rajin. Here, I'll throw you guys a bone because you guys don't these ones as much. But I would concede DiBella off the list before. Well, I wouldn't before Xarxes. Like I've got it quite high on my list, but I understand it might not be everyone's.
Be gone, DiBella.
Yeah. Very chaste boys. But yeah, I think of the two, like, kind of, like, love-related gods, Mara is really good. And I'm actually kind of getting reminded of how involved Mara is, like, in the RK story. She's involved in Alicia's story. She's also a common god in, like, pretty much every pantheon. I think...
Just to stress again, though, that RK story isn't necessarily true. It is one of those kind of myth things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
other people will just believe he's a god that's been around since forever, if you know what I mean. So that leaves us with 10, I think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2. Oh, if we, yeah, we got 10.
I'm happy to have Mummy Mara in the top 10, but maybe at 10.
I don't, why is that?
Yeah, that's true.
Because like, why have like compared to Rajin, who's got like some, you know,
Rajin's gone.
So what's our list left?
Okay. Akatosh, Ebon Arm, Kinnereth, Lorcan, Mara, Stendar, Talos, Trinimax, Xarxes, and Ifri. Gosh, Drew, you've really influenced this list.
Yeah, I would like Zark. Like to me, so Rajin is on it. Sorry, on it or gone? What was it again?
Gone.
I'd put Xarxes at the bottom. Honestly, I don't think he's that interesting. I wouldn't have Xarxes on the list at all. But
we got. What if he was Haemaeus Mora's concubine? Would you change
that? That changed it up. No, but I think the thing with Mara too. Like, I think the reason for you guys too, like. But it's kind of more, because it's just love, bro, and love and marriage and stuff. But maybe I just value love and marriage a lot, bro.
I know you do. I know you do. And this is kind of what I was trying to.
But this is a subjective
list. Is that doesn't mean that their lore is cool just because you're like a real.
No, but their lore is cool. She's involved. She's involved in Alicia. In coming to Alicia and so on. Involved in the RK story and so on. She's involved in. in the both pantheons, the Nordic and Alban dichotomy. And also she's involved, like, I mean, just the typical, like, Amulet of Mara marriage stuff that you kind of see. But, yeah, I'm sure there's...
Can I just ask you, Scott, do you have Kinnereth as number one?
I do have Kinnereth as number one.
I'm happy to put Kinnereth up the top for now and, like, kind of leave that area.
Yeah, agreed. Top, like, top three.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe. So Kinnereth's there. Yeah. Think top three for a second, top, guys.
Do you want me to just read mine?
I think top one is undisputed.
Yeah, like, can we all agree Kinnereth is number one?
No. Oh, sorry. No, I mean...
Okay.
Someone else is the other.
Okay, so here's what I had as top three originally. I had Kyne, then Lorcan, then Talos.
I'd have Lorcan at number one.
Yeah.
I knew it.
Yeah.
I mean, I meme about Trinimac, but, like, based on conversations we've had in the past, you kept on bringing up Lorcan.
Maybe it might be easier to work backwards, like to work from 1 to 10.
It's pretty anticlimactic.
Well, we've already said, like, it kind of feels like, I feel like the competition for one is kind of between Kyne or Lorcan, right?
Yeah, so we can put them as one and two, kind of confirmed. Like, I don't know what order yet, but we'll
just
put them there.
So you're saying that Ifri wouldn't be in the top two?
No.
So what about Talos?
You sell Talos, because Talos, for me, again, it's just a...
It's one of the best ascension stories.
Yes.
Even outside of Tiber Septim's things, what went into the creation of Talos and the fact that he wasn't even a god, the fact that he changed the landscape retrospectively, stuff like that. He's just so... Like, the whole idea that in the timeline of, like, Arena, Daggerfall, he's not a god yet, but then he kind of becomes a god in...
Okay, this is Scott here from the future. We got into a long and confusing discussion about Talos, but I think it's much better if I just summarize it here. Basically, Talos is an oversoul that features three individuals, Tiber Septim, Wulfarth, and Zurin Arctis. In the Arena Daggerfall timeline, Talos was not yet a god as such because the soul of Zurin Arctis, the Underking, was still bound to the Mantella. However, the end of the Daggerfall timeline results in the destruction of the Mantella, which unbinds his soul and allows the full oversoul of Talos to be formed. Now that Talos is a god, time breaks with the activation of the Nemidium and some retroactive timeline changing stuff happens. Now Talos was always a god, and with his new godhood he changed Cyrodiil from a jungle to forests and grasslands, even retroactively. So Cyrodiil technically never was jungle, or at least that's the top theory. This is also related to the Warp in the West, which results in the many feuding kingdoms of Hyrok forming into five, and then when you really, really look into it, all of this is lore that tries to explain the soft reboot of the series that was The Elder Scrolls III Morrowind. Regardless, the whole thing's really confusing and debatable at points, and it's one of the things that makes Talos as an entity so interesting, including things like the idea that he could be a kind of Lorcan reborn, a champion god of men, stuff like that, which plays into the idea why the Thalmor want to erase Talos from existence so badly by outlawing his worship. If you're really interested, you should check out our videos on the topic, and also, All in All, the guy who made the Pelennor Opera has recently made a really cool Evangelion Elder Scrolls mashup animation that features Tiber Septim and the Numidium with some of the more meta, crazy themes. Check that out. But yeah, back to the podcast.
Because this is the other thing, sorry, and what I was trying to explain poorly was the idea that in a conventional idea amongst you, if you went and asked Talos worshippers, or if you, the conventional orthodox idea is that Talos is just Tiber Septim was so good, the eight divines loved him so much that he sort of ascended and he became the ninth divine. Like, it's not, whereas the kind of reality is it involves a lot of dragon breaking Numidium Mantella kind of related stuff, and also that Talos is actually three souls combined into like an oversoul of Zurin Arctis, Ismir Wulfarth, who is like the Ash King and Ancient Order King, and then Tiber Septim. But only Tiber Septim got credit for it, because there's this whole idea that Tiber Septim also, like, you know, didn't know any of the shouts and stuff. It was just Ismir working the whole time, and then.
Okay. So we'll put Talos as third.
Yeah.
How would you feel about So we've got Akatosh, Ebonar, Mara, Stendar, Trinimac, Xarxes, and Ifri.
I'd say Akatosh.
As four?
Yeah, I think so. Because, I mean, it encompasses Auriel and Alduin as well. So...
Yeah.
It's so typical, though, eh?
Yeah, and Alkosh and...
I kind of agree. It's just...
And it's all Auriel's bow. I do like him as an elven deity, as the sort of Auriel's bow, and the idea that he strung the heart of Lorcan on and shot it and made Red Mountain. And I do like even the whole dragon thing is really cool. That, like, I like him and all of his interpretations. Like him even in the Redguard stuff being Tall Papa. And I think that's another reason, like, I also really like Sepp in that, him being, I'm pretty sure he's the leftover. He was made by, in that story, he was actually made by Tall Papa, aka Akatosh. So, and it made Sepp from the remnants of old world skins, I think it was, from the shedded skins of Sadakal. So it's just that, like, when you put all the cultural interpretations together, I think it really makes up, I guess, a higher...
Yeah, I agree.
To be honest, I might even consider over Talos, potentially.
I was just about to say that. When you sell it to me like that, as if that's not more interesting than Talos.
Yeah. We've sort of kind of got the top four-ish kind of thing. So where do we have Stendar in here?
I mean, we don't. The bottom six at this point are just whatever. So there's Ebonar, Mara, Stendar, Trinimac, Xarxes, Ifri. I feel like Stendar could... the way I look at it is, like, is Stendar cooler than Mara? I would be like, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Is Stendar cooler than Trinimac? For me, I would say yes.
If I was working from the bottom, I think Xarxes is the bottom.
Are you going to cop it, Drew?
I'm trying to decide between Xarxes and Ebonar, but I think so. Maybe Xarxes 10, Ebonar 9.
But are Xarxes and Ebonar both less cool than Mara, Drew?
Not to me personally, but I can totally see the reasons why you would
say so. I think outside of the poetic description of Xarxes and his wife, and outside of the poetic description of Ebonar and, like, what he looks like and the roses and the graveyard and stuff like that, and you know, his story with Sai as well.
But what about outside the poetic description of Mara being a concubine that you're so obsessed with?
She's involved with coming to Elysia and bringing her, like, all of the words and stuff. Which one's the book? It's not Songs of Pelennor. It's not the other one, Adabala. It's the one with all of the quotes from about.
Isn't it in the Songs of Pelennor that she comes?
Is
to,
it just
talks
in that
about
one?
Coming to Elysia?
For some reason,
sure
I'm
it is.
Splitting them in my head then.
Yeah, but I think it is the Songs of Pelennor.
But regardless, like, so there is that. And then I also like the idea that she's sort of the universal goddess. But like I said, it's the elven Nordic dichotomy. And also involved in, like, you know, Arkay's uprising. I can completely concede not high, but I would definitely put over Ebonar, who is also basically a retconned god with a poetic description.
All right. Okay.
Maybe Mara at 8.
How about Trinimac as 10? What do you two think of that?
Ooh. Trinimac absolutely beat Xarxes and
No, that's good. That's good.
I like Mara more. Oh, the other thing I like about Mara, I keep forgetting to say, is I really like Morwa, the Yakudin version and so on, and the idea that she has, like, forearms to grab many husbands, and that she has, like, these beehive shrines, and that she's sort of worshipped as, like, you know, sort of like the queen bee kind of thing. And I also like that in Nedic mythology,
I like that beehive shrines,
and then in the Nedic mythology there's even things with her having, like, four breasts or something like that to feed, like, she's kind of a little bit more alien looking because of all the extra limbs and stuff. But in the Nedic mythology, they have some sort of, like, primalish versions of deities. They might be connected to others, but one's called the Fat Mother, which is essentially this Nedic woman or something that was, like, she was feeding. They were, like, crossing a desert or something. I can't remember, some hostile terrain. And they was feeding them breast milk, basically, like, from a tits. And they all just called her fat, fat, and fat, and stuff like this. And then she became... But basically, the gods... I think she prayed to the gods or something for help or something like that. But the gods made her into a god, like a big fat bee thing. But it was only under the condition that the tribesmen aren't allowed to disrespect her anymore. Because a bee will sting you if... if you, like, kind of disrespect nature. That's kind of the idea that you're, like, because she's basically this big god of bounty and nourishment and stuff like that, and kind of like a loving mother figure kind of thing. Well, like literally called the Fat Mother. So people could argue too, that's another sort of connection to Mara and so on. But yeah, I just think like it's cool, like the idea that she's, because, you know, love is such a super universal force. It's going to be everywhere in some capacity. And you know, I think it's just, you know,
this is getting wholesome.
Yeah.
would you put Mara above Stendhal then?
Look, that's me thing, and I understand that's an impossible sell for you guys, but I'm
no,
happy.
No, it's not for me. I'm up really? For that. Yeah.
I do have Mara in my list. I did have Mara just above Stendhal, but you know, it's just for what subjectively I value.
But then Drew is going to really struggle to put Mara above Stendhal and all of those above Trinomac, Ebonarm, and Xarxes.
No, well, I'm actually happy to have Xarxes 10, Ebonarm 9.
Yep, okay.
Trinomac and Ifra, I'd still want to talk about a little more.
Okay, I can look, slot them. I honestly, I could put Mara at 8. I feel like that's kind of the best I'm going to do with you, unless because Michael definitely wouldn't put above Stendhal. You don't really care, but like I feel like the most, the easiest sell for the group is to put her at 8. Yeah?
Sure.
All right. Yeah, okay. So then we're working with Trinomac. Because it's funny. It's really funny because now I'm defending these. Hold on. But okay, we could talk about Ifri more, but I'd put Ifri below, actually, Mara. Because to me, besides...
Me too.
Besides Ifri just being like... besides the Green Pact kind of stuff, I really do like the songs part and the poetic sort of idea that and the priest with the spinners. But I don't know. It's just not it's not quite enough. Like, I just kind of...
You then have all the Khajiit stuff as well. So the idea that, you know, he formed it. So Azura got to make her children. And then it was Ifra who told Nerni about this. So then Nerni gave Ifra the ability to create the forest people. So that's why the forest people have always had the problems with the Khajiit and all of that stuff as well.
True. I mean, he's a cop. Like, this is... I don't know. Can you sell more? Like, the thing is, look, you know what's funny enough? Like, Trinomac, I don't even like that much because I feel like he's... I don't, like, dislike him. I just don't think he's that cool. He's just a very strong elven god who fought Lorcan and stuff. But, like, to me, so is Auriel. But, like, Auriel has all of this other stuff, and that's why they're up there. Because
I would be really keen to put Trinomac as 10.
Obviously, we can't give Trinomac any credit for everything that comes after the consumption, because that's just Malakath.
Yeah.
It's like it's not part of the same deity anymore.
I would probably put Trinomac at 8, if I think about it. I would still prefer Trinomac over at Ebonarm, because Ebonarm's actually not that...
Yeah.
It's just a poetic description. If you actually just like... Because we have no description of Trinomac, for example, really. Take that away... And then if you put Ebonarm on the same playing field, besides like creating Sai, and like, you know, I guess that's a cool story, but besides that, it's just a god of war.
But I feel like you can't just strip away all the things that make it cool and then just go, but besides that, it's just...
No, but I'm just terms in story. Like, yeah, but in terms of story, I mean that Trinomac...
You could do that to any god, just be like, I'm going to take away this and this.
No, but you could...
Mara,
I'm saying their descriptions.
She's just a god
no,
of
I'm
love.
Just saying the description. I'm saying what makes Ebonarm cool, half of what you're talking about, is the actual sort of mythological description. For example, Akatosh as a thing is and or ale or whatever, through the different interpretations and so on, it's kind of what they do as well. It's not so much just what they look like. It's not, I'm just a dragon, so I'm cool, or I'm just an elf dude, or you know what I mean? Like, it's... But obviously descriptions factor in, but, like, I'm not, like... I'm just trying to, like, strip it away a little bit more, that Ebonarm really is just... In terms of what they actually do in story, it was in Daggerfall times, it was worshipped in the Fighters Guilds and stuff... And it was a favored god in Hammerfell, god of war, and then made Sai. But outside of that,
I think,
there's not much. But
I
Trinomac,
think we can lock him in at 9.
I'm happy to.
The reason Trinomac would be above, I would say, is definitely because he's like this super strong elven warrior god that managed to kill Lorcan, and then he had to be, like, the whole story of his betrayal and so on, he's so powerful that he had to be betrayed and gets corrupted. he's not, we're obviously not counting everything beyond the corruption, but just even that whole story and significance of it. And plus, he is also sort of also worshipped by orcs in contemporary times, which is kind of with some orcs, which is cool because it's sort of like this idea where they're not accepting this idea of Malekith and instead still... Mm.
100%. I'm all down to put Trinimac over Ebonarm. I just want to be careful that we don't just strip away the cool things.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I would say... I would
put Ebonarm over Xarxes, though, still, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. So,
if Xarxes is 10.
So, 10 Xarxes, 9 Ebonarm, 8 Trinimac.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, and so, are we going to say Ifri's cooler than those three and put Ifri at 7?
I would put... I'd put Mara next, personally. But and obviously, like, I've had some of the more out there takes. So I would put Ifra ahead of Mara and Stendar at 6, personally.
I don't think I don't know, Michael, you might have to be the I'd put Mara above Ifri. Because...
I'm in a position of power.
Yeah, you're in a position of power. I'm not going to be butthurt either way, I don't think, really. It's kind of semantic. But, like... it's just with Ifri, it's kind of a very specific, and I guess it's kind of what you prefer. Like besides the, like we said, the poetic stuff with the storytelling and so on, and the waves and forests and stuff like you were talking about, and the Green Pact, and also, you know, and also how it was related to how it was interpreted in, the Khajiit pantheon is cool, but.
There's also a cool personality that does come through, like portrayed as a nosy spirit that can't keep secrets, eavesdropping on Azura's creation of the Khajiit and telling Nerni what he overheard, and that kind of stuff. I think it also helped
break up a couple of the divines as well.
I feel like I can put Ifri above Mara. That's just what I'm feeling.
Sorry, Ifri beats
Mara.
Yeah, let's go Mara and then Ifra above Mara and then... Stendar next.
Okay, can we just get... How do you pronounce this Bosma deity?
I say Ifra, or...
Yeah, sometimes you say... Like, it's one of those words. Sometimes you say Ifri.
I've probably said Ifri before, yeah.
But then you got Jeffa and other ways of pronouncing it. And Ifa to the...
See, I also... That's one thing, I guess, to a fault of Ifri for me, or Ifra, or whatever. The fault for that is outside of the Valenwood Elsewhere area, boring as hell to me. Jeffa in the Breton pantheon and stuff like that does not resonate with me at all, because I'm like, to me, it's a very specific Valenwood locational god, if that makes sense. Whereas by comparison, like Mara is it's a much more of a universal force god, so the loves everywhere and the multiple interpretations, whereas like I'll like the interpretation in Nordic pantheons, I'll like the interpretation in Elven or Khajiit pantheons or whatnot, like, but Ifri to me is really, I like the Khajiit perspective on it because it's geographical.
Okay, look let's just assume that they're 6 and 7. They may change, but for now they're 6 and 7.
Although I'm happy enough to put okay, Ifri above,
but 5 is Stendar.
Just for, even if I was just to throw in like that Ifri's responsible for Wood Elves.
Yeah.
That's fair
enough. Stendar's 5.
Yeah.
It's just the only slot left. And then it's Talos, Akatosh. And I guess we've got to decide if Lorcan wins or Kinnereth wins. I'm on team Kinnereth/Kyne.
Same.
See, that's kind of shocking to me. Because I think Kinnereth is awesome. There's so much cool lore about her. But everything comes down to Lorcan.
Do you know what?
Like, it really does.
The one thing I would throw there, if you're not counting Shezarines and stuff like that, or all that kind of stuff, like the avatars as much, Lorcan's dead, and his service is being dead. So there's the heart of Lorcan and so on. And you know, it's important for, that's how the tribunal arose with, and that's how the Numidium and stuff was all made. I like him as, you know, sure being the sort of like tough warlord god. But if you actually did strip it away, in the same way that Auriel is a bit basic in that he's just an elven king god, so is Shaw in a lot of ways. I do like Sovngarde and the underworld things. I also really do like Shaw being represented as a fox, being the trickster god. I think that pushes him up, because I like how they've kind of canonized somewhat the idea in the Nordic pantheon that he did trick and betray, just because it's in his sort of nature and stuff. But the other thing I do like, Shazar, I think, is a pretty plain, to be honest, version of it.
To me... to me, you just accidentally sold Lorcan even more.
Yeah,
because you're talking about how he's dead, but even in death, he's contributed to more cool stories and lore than anyone else. His heart alone has created the most cool stuff.
Yeah, but it's not, it's his corpse. It's kind of like, you know, the god, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of his corpse. Look, the reason I would say...
I think the corpse of the god is important.
Yeah, the reason I'm saying I would put... I just need to get it up as well, just to make sure I cover everything I want to.
Because there is a lot of cool stuff with Kynareth and Kyne.
The biggest thing with... Look, okay, let's just throw out the nature thing real quick. Nature's cool. Okay, but that's... Kynareth's the most boring version, right? The Kyne in particular is just awesome. I love the idea that she... There's the idea that she breathed... she created men on the throat of the world. And it's called the Mother of Men. That's that mother figure and so on. And she's associated with... I like that she's the more aggressive sort of storm, wind and rain rather than the sort of just, oh, like, you know, benevolent forest kind of thing. I also like it's just an interesting take that she's basically... Because Shore is canonically dead to them, Kyne is the head of the Nordic pantheon and she's this sort of warrior queen goddess kind of thing. I also like that she has a son in the form of Morrowhouse, who's a sick... demigod as well. The Thum too. She's responsible for the Thum, and I know Skyrim added it and made it so it's like Parthenax did it at the behest of Kyne or whatnot. But originally she's the whole breath of Kyne stuff, it's her giving the Thum, which is I think is the coolest ability out of pretty much all the Elder Scrolls to the Nords.
My interpretation of that is a more practical one, in that the Nords chose to credit Kyne for the Thum, whereas the reality is the dragons just get, like, Parthenax defected for whatever reason, whether it be Kyne's influence, and simply taught them their language, like anyone teaching a language. That's the way I interpret it, more than... Because it does kind of sound like the Nords said that through Parthenax, Kyne did this, but it's like, well, there's no proof of that. As well, but
yeah, it's again, just the like, two yeah. different things saying that Parthenax did or versus Kyne did.
Kanafi's also great in the sense that to the Khajiit, she kind of like carries them up to the sands behind the stars.
And Kyne performs a similar kind of thing, like for example, for Wulfarth, when he gets blasted into ashes, it said that Kyne lifted the ashes into the heavens below, above, and so on. And I think it was even he got blasted into oblivion, but she pulled him from oblivion or whatnot. But And yeah, like Morrowhouse is super cool. 1 second, there's more.
I hate to like devalue your argument, but at the end of the day, I feel like we're having this conversation because of Lorcan. Everything exists the way it does because of him.
Yeah,
and
but
the reason Kynareth has her role.
But then Auriel should
Lorcan's
be number one.
Trick.
Then Auriel should be number one because the universe wouldn't begin to be able to start without the concept of time, because time stabilized the universe, which then allowed
I'm not going to argue that the concept of time is the coolest, whereas I think his trick, his deceiving of all the other original spirits, you know, the spirits of Aetherius to create the Mundus is inherently cooler than time.
Yeah, the one thing that was cool too, that is a Blood Moon thing. One of the default like enemies are they're called the Fry's Hags, and they're basically just these like nature witches that are addicted to worshipping Kyne and so on, and they like really take it seriously and stuff like that. There's just little bits of like, kind of, it's a sort of like, you know how Morrowind's interpretation of the gods of other cultures are often better and so on. But it's the other thing too, hold on.
I feel like I'm just this referee sitting here about to decide the fate of our list by saying that Lorcan is number one.
Yeah, it's going to come down to you.
The Doom Drum. Come on, that's the
coolest
name.
I love that.
Name.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, that is really cool. I mean, look, I like Lorcan.
I got him with
well.
The Doom Drum.
Yeah. It's any, poetic words will always get me. But like, yeah. It's boring, but yeah. I mean, Kyne will be my number one still. I just think, and I think, you know, I just like it. I don't know.
You
know,
maybe
like
we need to realized as well that
sorry, go on.
Kyne is cool and was ranked really high for me subjectively. And then when we started to talk about it, I was like, oh, this is actually quite... Like, I think Lorcan's cooler.
It's kind of less... It's just, to me at least, I guess... I guess it's also what you'd value, but like... Kyne, in a way, I would say, is more in an active role versus a passive role. Because Lorcan died, and then the Tribunal, right? Tribunal, like, Lorcan didn't, like, bless the Tribunal and stuff with their power or anything like that. His... they just took it from the heart that was there and froze in the ground. Like, it's kind of all frozen. It's passive because he's dead. He was just a cool warrior god beforehand. Whereas Kine, you know, gave the Nord's thumb. Supposedly, you know, it depends if... just take them at face value. Gave him the thumb, breathed life into the world, sent down Morrowhouse to help Pelennor Whitestrake and the Humans' Rebellion. Like, she's essential to human... birth or proliferation. That's what I'm trying to say, on Tamriel. And then also, like, I do just like the Kanathi sort of... also Tava as well. I like that she's the one that... so it's a nice poetic description there.
I actually think... oh, go on. If you've got more to say about Kanathi. No, because mine is like a final thought on the
final hammer in the nail. The smack. I'm just trying to find... I just want to find the exact description of Tava because there's something really nice that I like there.
Okay. Well, while you do that, I think, Michael, if you don't want to be the one to decide... okay, well, what we could also do on the side is... maybe it's worth having pinned comments for each god. I know people will have their own opinion on who's number one, but maybe we can get some help on deciding who's better out of Lorcan.
Yeah, I think we should still agree upon one to say, but then also just see if, like, oh, who should have won, and then, like, comment both. Well, yeah, you know
so
what wait, I mean.
So, Michael, what was your final decision?
Oh, I think I've had to put Lorcan as number one. The Doom Drum. Lorcan. Just keep saying the Doom Drum, boys, and you'll win.
I thought Lorcan would win by a landslide for all of us.
I guess that the ultimate it comes down to is it's just the passive role. Like, if you actually analyze, like, kind of, like, I know the big trick thing and he did it, and there's the cool, like, Nordic fox connection stuff like that, the symbolism and so on, but, like, ultimately what he is a god that either tricked or did create people or so on, or create, like, you know what I mean, it varies depending what perspective, but then his purpose to the sort of story is being dead, and then he's and people abused his corpse and used his power, but he didn't, like, he just doesn't have the same active role. There are parts, actually, I'll throw in extra stuff. There is some cool stuff in there with him and Wulfarth and so on. Like, there's this version of Battle Red Mountain in the Five Songs of Wulfarth where he goes to Red Mountain. It's a line something like, don't you know what this battle really is? It's basically this idea that they're going to reincarnate Shaw, because Dagoth comes to the Nords and he's like, I'll show you where the heart of your dead god is, essentially, and there's a chance at reviving him and so on. And I guess there's some sort of Ghost of Shaw stuff like that. But and look, mate, we can agree that Kine and Shaw are the power couple gods of the Elder Scrolls, for sure.
I think it's just, to me, being dead means nothing when it comes to the Aedra, because they're so disconnected anyway.
I mean, that's...
like, all of them are incredibly disconnected, and it's kind of... you can say, oh, you know, they're actively doing this, but even if they were dead and it was still, like, their power was still having an effect on the world, the difference isn't really important to me. If anything, it's cooler that, you know, the corpse of him and the still beating heart. I mean, I don't know what's happened to the heart now, technically, but so long as it's still beating, he can't really be a dead god.
Was it ever beating? Or was it just that one 3D model that just sits there and hums?
I mean, humming, you know, is a very small kind of beat.
I guess also if you... I'll put it at the top. But to me, it's not a complete landslide.
You need to be a lawyer, Drew. Humming is a kind of beat. Like, you won't even give him that.
Look, I think it's going to have to... like, we can agree, but at the same time, I think it will come down to which comment has the most likes.
Curious, though, where did you have Kine and Kinnereth? Because you didn't have as two or anything, did you?
I had her at 9.
That's crazy. So that's why, that's like... because what would you have, Michael?
As for Kinnereth?
Yeah.
Kine, 1. That's right. List that was super subjective and constantly changed. I had Lorcan as number one at one point.
Yeah.
And I had Kine as number one at one point.
Yeah.
I didn't expect to see Ifri up the list this far, but
I kind of didn't either. I feel like this is just It's just kowtowing to Drew here.
Yeah, I'm probably going to get a bit of hate for some of the weird ones.
I don't think so. I feel
some
like
weird guys into the top 10.
I feel
you'll get love more than anything.
I feel like I'll get the horny police set on me. Yeah. For wanting just because I wanted some representation for women up at the top there, you know, right? Let it be known that I was fighting for women's rights.
Scott has ascended. He's the god of simps.
All right, the final list.
Reach heaven through simping.
The final list is Lorcan, Kyn, Akatosh, Talos, Stendar, Ifri, Mara, Trinimac, Ebonarm, and Xarxes.
I feel like Xarxes doesn't belong there, but whatever.
All right.
It's just that, like, it's kind of hard. Like, it's compared to the Aedra, like, where there's, compared to the Daedra, where there's like heaps of strong feelings because they're really, they've all got a big personality. The personalities are way more vague and they're not really as concrete as they are for the Daedra. So, like, I feel, I'm not as 100% like, yeah, it has to be for like a lot of them. A lot of them I'm kind of indifferent. Like, it's really kind of like only the top five-ish that I kind of cared about.
Yeah, same. I feel like I'm much more passionate about the Daedric princes and their rankings. Yeah. I mean, there was way more to choose from in this video as well, so...
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, if we had any of the tribunal and stuff in there, it would just blow them out of the water, hands down. But, yeah. All right. Well, there's your disappointing answer for some of you, but for some of you will love it because you loved Lorcan at the top. But basically, top two, I feel like not everyone will agree on the Kyn Kinnereth stuff as a number two.
Yeah, they'd say way lower. But
some
basically,
of them. Although
Lorcan
I was looking at
one.
Some of the comments, some people were. Some of them were surprising, like Julianos and some
and
people like
Zenithar,
and I'm like, what? Like, I mean, you must really like commerce or something, like really just like heavy on that angle or something. But like, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thank you everyone for watching. Thank you for tuning in. I am glad that you guys love the Elder Scrolls lore as much as we do and will actually listen to us talk about all this nerdy stuff. Social media links are in the description below and we'll put comments in the description that you can thumb up for who you think the winner should be.
Lorcan.
Kyn.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Yeah.
And we'll be back to nerd out with you again next time.